Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Run Productions.
Welcome to Unknown Paranormal Radio. I am your host, Kevin, of Unknown Paranormal.
This is Martin of Bravo Paranormal.
And this is Jeff, also of Unknown Paranormal.
Welcome to the show, peeps.
So last week we had a
very interesting night last night, I have to say.
Oh, really?
Cool.
Yeah, we had an investigation of Hotel Marshall last night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The whole team was there. Our newest member, Josh, he was there. Aaron and his wife, Tina, from L.A. Spirits, came along as some guest investigators, and Kim and Eric Rossinger from Pima, Paranormal Encounters Network, who have, we found out, moved from Tennessee down here to Longview, Texas, and they joined us. And it's interesting because Eric and Kim, they lived in Tennessee. They lived an hour from Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, Martin. So they were a frequent visitor of that location, and we talked about that, and they gave me some more information on that building as far as the spirits there. So I found out who was messing around with us during our radio show broadcast from there on the third floor.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, he's a doctor. I don't remember the name, but he's a doctor that worked there, and he's the negative entity that's there.
Oh, yeah.
And the nurse that, remember that Mike went downstairs and talked to a nurse that Michael picked up through the radio show?
Yeah.
The nurse he talked to was actually the head nurse that he was having an affair with because he was married.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And interesting fact, the girls, remember, that were getting affected, the only ones that got messed with was because his wife was blonde hair and his mistress was black hair. And if you remember correctly, three of my team members that were getting messed with were either blonde or black hair. Didn't mess with Sean because she has brown hair. And Stacy, she has brown, isn't it?
Yeah, brownish red.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. That kind of makes sense with the whole thing. But, we had a good investigation last night. We got home right when the thunderstorms hit over here that came from Dallas area, knocked out my power. That was fun trying to carry all the equipment in the pitch dark. We did some new experiments. We started our new techniques for 2013. We tested fire last night by using a candle and seeing if the spirits would manipulate the fire. We tested quartz. We took quartz into an investigation and set it up around the equipment. And then we actually had another set of quartz, Martin, that we set on top of an EM pump and charged them before we brought them in the room to kind of see what happens when these things are, because they hold energy. We're testing natural items, and we actually did the flashcard experiment that I've talked to you guys on the show about many a times. of doing the EVP session, holding up questions that the investigators do not know what the question is. They just hold it up and see if they get an answer.
We were supposed to do that at Old South, but when we got there, we were like kids in a candy store, you know?
Yeah. So we actually put these things to a test in a controlled setting and did it just like I had to pull out my thinking cap of how we used to do scientific experiments in school. And, you know, because I want to make it as valid experiment as possible so that, you know, you don't get criticized as much. I want valuable information to share with other teams. Because next month at the ParaUnity, I'll be putting on a class called Thinking Outside the Box in the Paranormal, and we're going to share some of the techniques that we just used last night. And we actually got some video of all the experiments as well, so you can kind of see what we were doing.
Nice. Yeah, you know, I was thinking about the crystal thing with the EM pump.
And, yeah.
You should find a way to, you know, the electronic EM pump that I put on my YouTube that you guys can make real quick.
Yeah.
Find a way to attach that to one of the crystals and just like leave it like that permanently, you know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That, in fact, that EM pump that I built that you helped me build, that's the one I use to charge the crystals with.
Oh, yeah. I think in a decent sized project box, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Attach a bunch of those crystals to the inside of the lid on the inside, you know.
Yeah.
See if that does anything. Cause I watched the skull experiment this past week. And it was, man, they got some crazy stuff, man, like stuff I've never even seen before, you know? But there's this other group that talks about going beyond the skull experiment, and they do a lot of crystal photography. And all they really do is take pictures of crystals, like, up close.
Uh-huh.
Dude, I'll tag you in a few of the photos, man. They got, like, people's faces, like got color of the skin, like, everything, man. Dude, but that totally made me rethink the whole crystal thing because I actually want to try it out now.
Yeah, that's the route we're going, testing elements. We didn't get to do the singing bowls, which that's crazy. It kind of goes on the idea of Martin that you and I talk about with vibrations. Dee showed it to me when we got there, and you basically hit the side of this bowl, and you got this ceramic or whatever it's made out of, little stick kind of thing. Yeah, and she goes around it, and the faster she goes, the higher the frequency is. And, boy, it started hurting my ears. It was just rattling the inside of that hotel. And we ran out of time to do that one, so that's the next experiment we're going to do at the next investigation, and that's using sound and vibration, and it's a natural sound. It's not electronically made, right?
Yeah. I she did that when they came over here not too long ago.
Yeah.
She showed me the bowl, and, man, I was outside, and I could feel the vibration coming off that bowl, man. It was like, it has that sound to it, you know? I was like, dude, I told Dee Dee, I was like, that thing feels like it's affecting my soul, man. The vibration.
Yeah.
I can feel that coming off of it.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, we did a lot of great things last night. Eric showed us a different way to do the Gonsfeld. We always use a red light, and he suggested using a blue light. It's a different it does something different in the experiment, and he has a white noise, but his white noise changes, and it every different white noise frequency that you hear is on the same wavelength as your brain, and it hits all the frequencies of your brain. And Mike said that was the, you know, one of the weirdest Gonsfelds he's had because of the experience he had when he was under. And so that was very interesting. Watching that, and I got that on video. But yeah, we found out lot of information. What's really cool about last night was all the information that we got ties into Fort Worth Paranormal's investigation of that building from last year's East Texas Ghost Con. And it also ties in with all the history Shonda dug up. So we know a lot about the building, a lot about the spirits that are there, what has happened in that building. So we've uncovered a lot of information. So it'll be really cool for this year's East Texas Ghost Con, because we're going to do something a little bit different as far as the teams that are going to investigate the buildings. We're just going to assign teams to, they're going to be in one building all night, right? And we're just going to rotate. We're going to rotate the people that are going to go on the investigation. And so the teams, whatever teams get that building, they're going to be in for a treat, because we'll have a lot of information to give them so that they can use it for their investigation.
Nice. Well,
I was sick, Martin, because I decided the night before the investigation to take my SB7 apart and take the antenna off of it so that it doesn't pick up as many radio stations on the FM mode. And apparently I knocked one of those little tiny, tiny, tiny transistor deals off.
Oh, man.
Fail.
Yeah. So I got to find a picture of a SB7 that actually is in operation to find out where this goes on the board, because it's got two soldering spots on one side of it, one solder on the other side of it. And that's why it's not coming through the speaker. So it's an easy fix if I can just figure out where it goes.
Yeah. I need to download those pictures to my computer so I can see them bigger.
Yeah.
And then hopefully we can kind of pinpoint it out. And
yeah.
I've been asking a couple of friends, but nobody wants to take their SB7 apart. Oh, man, if I still had mine, dude, I would have took mine apart the other day. But I sold mine when I built my ghost box here at the house.
Yeah.
Oh,
but we did have something interesting happen on the Ovilus. We were actually at one point talking to the negative entity that's in that building, and he actually raped a woman on the fifth floor. Jeff remembers this because we had all that information from the first time. But we found out more information. His name was Jeremy, and he was a bellhop there. And he apparently was interested in this woman, and she turned him down, and that's when he brutally raped her. And we were talking to him, and he was trying to intimidate Mike, which, you know, that doesn't work. And our ovulus actually said, I'm going to say this on air, it said, "Fuck you, sir." I mean, loud and clear, we got that from the ovulus.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And you know that's not programmed in the vocabulary of that box.
No, not at all. From what I understand, there's 2,000 words programmed, but none of them are curse words.
No, they're not.
Even though in 2013 curse words are more common than any other vocabulary, but
pretty much.
You know, yeah, because Jeff actually is a curse word. I just don't like calling him it.
Nice. Oh, this is true.
Oh man, yeah, I had some interesting things happen to me this weekend, man, and we weren't even investigating. I went to Jeremy Jones' house to kind of throw a little promo video together for him, for, you know, showing, not really showing what he does, because he doesn't want to put out that kind of information, but just kind of showing the shop and him working a little bit, you know. And,
right.
And he was actually taking a drill bit out of his drill press and putting another, like a different size one in. And right as he took one out, I got a super clear EVP. And usually when I do like that kind of filming, I run two mics. I run one off my boom mic, you know, and then one off the on-camera mic so I can sync them up later. The boom mic was in the back of the room, and I picked up the EVP loudest on the boom mic, and it said, "Where's Stacy?"
What?
And I didn't even notice until I got home, and I was watching all the videos, trying to clip out, see what, you know, what is going to make the video, and I was like, "What?" I was like, "No way." And then today we're filming with Jeremy, and we're kind of messing around, and we found an old car that we're going to break out a window on because it was on his property. And he's like, "Yeah, man." He's like, "We tried to break it, and I had not my boom pole, but like a monopod, you know? And I struck the window, and it wouldn't go through, and then Clay struck the window, and it didn't break, and then Jeremy struck the window, didn't break. I was like, "I'll be right back." And then so I had like a cinder block, and I was like, "Quick, somebody's inside. We need to save them." And I picked up the cinder block, and it goes straight through the window, right? And we're all laughing, man. And there's some kind of weird, like, female EVP, right? When we're all laughing, she said something. And she said something like she's mad at us. But I hadn't had a chance to really pull it out and find out what she's saying. But I was like, oh. I've had some weird EVPs just pop up for no reason, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, Jeff, do you have the bio for our guest tonight, Miss Martha Decker?
I do. Just got to pull it up here. And I'd like to say that I have a new addition to my little family here. I adopted a dog from one of my coworkers. She is a part blue heeler, part German shepherd. So if you've heard a dog barking earlier tonight, that was her. And if you hear a dog throughout the show, that's also her. But right now she's kind of chilled out.
Mine's asleep.
Well, I hope mine goes that way soon. Anyway, this week our guest is Martha Decker. She's the founder of East Texas Paranormal. The group was formed in 2007, several years after she had already began investigating the paranormal. She had had some personal experiences when she was very young, and she ended up going into law enforcement, and she retired from law enforcement in 2007 as the assistant chief of police and started delving into a lot of different areas of interest that she had prior to joining the police force. She says it's been fun and relaxing, and even though she took on another full-time job in addition to working for herself as a Texas process server. So that is Martha Decker, and I believe I'm seeing a 903 number, so I'm going to go ahead and guess that that's her. Hello, Martha, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Great.
Good.
How are you doing?
I'm here, and I'm worn out in Houston from my other full-time job.
Uh-oh. Nice.
Yes.
Well, Martha, just to touch on your background on everything, give us a little bit of information on how you got into the paranormal. What sparked your interest in getting into this field?
Well, it started as a young child, like a lot of other people. I had some experiences. The earliest experience was probably when I was about 4 years old. And then things would happen off and on, you know, as a child and as a teenager, and that sparked my interest, well, even before being a teenager, because I saw some really weird things and stuff, and you know, it just continued on. And I was always interested in it through, law enforcement and stuff. I just didn't have time. I don't have time now, but I didn't quite have the time, you know, to get a group going. And I did a lot of stuff on my own or with, you know, another friend or two that was interested prior to actually founding the group.
Nice.
Very cool.
Now, I know that you've been in law enforcement, and I have some other friends in the field that have also been in law enforcement, and y'all have an advantage because you can use what you did in your job and apply it to the field.
Well, that's right, because we also tend to look at things a lot differently than your normal average person, because we just think different. You know, it's like a good example is somebody who's never been in law enforcement or any kind of investigative stuff. You know, we could go into a house and sit there, and there may be people coming in and out and in and out and in and out, and, you know, my friend could sit there who didn't have the extra training or something, and they could think, wow, they have a lot of friends, or, you know, if they need any help, they've got a lot of people they can call on, and, you know, kind of just thinking in that, from that angle, while I'm sitting there thinking, dope house.
Right.
You know, just totally different, you know, and when people, I know I've talked to other people in this field with a paranormal, and if they do investigations like we do with clients and stuff, with private homes and private businesses, and when they get the call, a lot of people will just immediately believe everything that the caller tells them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that we disbelieve, we just keep an open mind and unbiased until there's more research done into it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we look for other causes of what could be occurring, if it actually is. And we've had everything from, you know, they needed medical help and they were having, you know, mental problems, to somebody was trying to mess with the people so that they would run off and go away, you know, or think they're crazy or something. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just asking. Yeah, I tell them sometimes I feel like when I'm asking questions and stuff, when I'm doing an in-depth interview and I'm asking about their you know, their medical health and medications and diseases, or, you know, family history and stuff. They do that, and you ask about their mental health and if they have been diagnosed with anything, what kind of medications are you on, and on and on. And it's like, you know, I've done that so many times, booking people into jail, I feel like I'm doing a book-in. But, you know, at least I know it from heart. Some people in the paranormal field think, well, this is too personal to ask that. But if you're really going to do an in-depth interview and really try to help them, not just go in there and set up your stuff and get some information and never talk to them, you go away and never talk to them anyway. But if you're trying to actually help them, you need to find out as much information as you can. And then a lot of it, you go and you try to corroborate it, almost like you were doing a criminal investigation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know we're still working on a current case right now, and the client involved has a lot of physical and, you know, issues, and takes a lot of medication for it and whatnot. And some of the stuff she has told us is just like, just crazy stuff, which we dealt with some of the cases where there actually is some really weird things going on. But, you know, it's one of those things we spent, oh God, 2.5-3 hours sitting down with the client and interviewing the family and trying to get some more information, you know. And then we went in with Mike and a few others, and we did a little mini investigation, because we don't really want to set up too much stuff and stir something up. You know, we just try to do what we can, collect some data, EVPs, whatnot, see if we can experience anything that the client is. And we were there for a good 4 or 5 hours, and we got nothing, no EVPs, no nothing. And, you know, at the same point, we still have to take into consideration the client and their fear factor and what's going on. And of course, like you said, you know, medications they're on and how much are they creating in their mind. And, you know, so Mike's been really working with them and the activity seems to be dissipating a little bit. So I don't know if it's because we're empowering the client, you know, getting them to really dig into their faith a little bit more and empower them in the fact that they control the house and who's in the house. And so, yeah, it's kind of like, in a way, you become, as an investigator, you also become like a family counselor, it seems like, with a lot of these clients.
You do, and I feel grateful that I've got, I actually have over 20 years of investigative experience, everything from journalistic to criminal, to the bulk of it's criminal, and then now I'm working, you know, with an agency within the state, and I'm still doing investigations, but I'm doing it on the civil side. So, you know, it continues, and that, and I continue to take my training. I still go to law enforcement classes, and I keep all my training needed in case I ever wanted to go back into it and stuff. So I get as much as I can, and I'm constantly learning and trying to keep everything sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can use it with this. And it, to me, it's important when I go in and I work with clients. We do like you do. We do the investigation, and we'll have a camera running. We'll have a recorder running, and we're not going to do an investigation necessarily. And depending on what it is, we may go around and take some base readings and just basic
mm-hmm.
stuff like that and go back and review it. Now, if it's something that could possibly be more on the demonic side, non-human side, because we're also affiliated with PWSM and with paranormal clergy, we get cases through them that people have written to them and they think there's something demonic there. And when we do those, we don't even necessarily go into the house, because
yeah.
if there is something there, it'll be wherever they're at. And then
mm-hmm.
we just do the basic on those, and we'll do a really in-depth, super in-depth interview, and then go back and review our audio and our video to see if we have anything. And then we go from, you know, from that point. We also, we almost say we do aftercare with them. And, you know, because there's one that we, your group and ours, we worked on off and on for the last 2 years in one form or another. And
yeah.
I try to do that with a lot of them. I'll, you know, about every, in the beginning, about every 3 or 4 months, if I don't hear from them, I'll just touch base for about the first year, you know, how's things going, if you got any problem, you know, anything cropped up or anything, and just for at least a year, just periodically, so that they know that if there is, they can call. And I think one important thing, too, is building good rapport with them. When you're asking your questions, you don't want them to feel like you're judging them. Because, you know, a lot
yeah.
of people, if they're on medications or they do have mental diagnosis, they think, oh, they just don't think it's, you know, it's because I'm bipolar, it's because I'm schizophrenic. And, you know, and that one you watch, because is it there because it's just in their head, or is the mental issues they have, you know, made them more susceptible to something? And you make them feel, and if they're doing illegal drugs, it's like, tell me, I'm not here to judge you. I'm not going to make a phone call. And yes, almost everybody in our group has been in law enforcement previously or currently. You know, we're there to help. Now, so every once in a while, I think when there's kids involved, are we going to have to make a phone call? Because this person really sounds totally out there.
Yeah.
We haven't had to make any phone calls, but we move quicker when there's children there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, another thing, when I had spoken to you, I actually met you in Granbury when I was set up at the table of paranologies. And,
right.
Another cool thing that I thought was that you actually have a background in photography as well. So, I mean,
yes.
that's another thing you can add to the whole skill set you have is, you know, if you get something, some kind of weird anomaly on photograph or video, you have that know-how to, you know, is it something paranormal or is it not, you know, like what are the dynamics of the photo itself, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I did. I started that at 18 years old professionally, and I worked that professionally up through the 80s, both as staffing newspapers and freelancing and stuff. I've had stuff in the, like your coffee table photo book. I've had stuff in magazines mm-hmm. and in all sorts of newspapers. And I think learning on the 35 millimeter was really good. Mm-hmm. And having, you know, and I used to develop my own film and everything. So having that knowledge and then throwing it in with the digital, and of course being there with the digital in its infancy, and then where it is now compared to where it was back then.
yeah.
You know, and when you're trying to talk to people and you're trying to explain like orb pictures and stuff to, you know, to them, and because you just didn't get that with the, I didn't even get that with the 35 millimeter film. Now, when I used to shoot 8 millimeter video,
mm-hmm.
I would have stuff in there that I would see through the camera frame, not like a lot of the stuff you see with the digital recording even, but that was a lot different than what you see like that with what people call orbs now. And I had quite a bit of interesting video, actually, and most of it was probably over at the Jefferson Hotel. I used to go there about every 6 weeks, and almost every time I went, I had something. And at one time, I had put together a video for the owners years ago, and unfortunately, they had the book they used to keep stolen, and they had that video was stolen and several things like that. So that was lost, and that's one of the things I keep meaning to do is sit down with the film and put it mm-hmm. to DVD now, because I had all kinds of interesting stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
For example, when we were there one trip, it was a friend and I and five high school girls from Gilmer who had pulled their money, and that was what they were going to do for the weekend. And they had a room. They had a room downstairs. One of them near the back where there's like a little alcove and that you would get cigar smoke and such. And mm-hmm. Charlene and I were upstairs, and I don't remember which room we were staying in that trip. But I remember, you know, that was it. There wasn't anybody else in there but us. Well, and then the parents that stayed in the back room downstairs. And we were in the restaurant eating, and you hear this herd of elephants running through the hallway upstairs and down the stairs and out. And when we're done, well, first of all, when I walked in, that was like static electricity. I used to do that when I would walk into that hotel. Immediately, I would get like the goosebumps on, and I go, this is going to be a good weekend. So we go and, you know, we talk to the girls. We go and when we get done, and they're just hanging around outside, and they're like, we don't want them to think we're like punk teenagers, you know, but
right.
Something happened when we were up there. And it's like, well, show me. Show me what happened, because they get all kinds of weird things here. And we went upstairs and went into room 19, and the girl said one of them sat on the very edge of the bed, and she just kind of laid back. And as she laid back, she said, I wonder if anything's going to happen in here tonight. And like as soon as she said that, they had some really, when I looked, the bed broke. And it was, they had a long thin slats that were ran the length of the bed on one side, but they were like real old and real brittle, and it was like pulverized. When I looked, that broke. It's not the slats that go across, hold the, you know, the springs up and everything. And I, you know, and I told them, that's okay. We just go down there, tell them what happened. They, you know, weird things happen, and that'll be fine. So they had that experience, and they stuck to us that whole night. And we went and went through all the different rooms, and we were in room 16, and I had planned another trip in 2 weeks. And 16 was the room I had booked. So one girl and I were in that room. A couple were on the stairs, and the rest were in the hall by the room. My friend was in the hall. My friend had a hearing sensitivity problem, so she wore a lot of earplugs, or, you know, would wear mm-hmm. them quite a bit. And so as the other girl and I are in that room, I was thinking, I think I'm going to do what she did. So I'm just panning through the room with the camera, and I go, I'll be back here in 2 weeks with my sister. I wonder if anything will happen. And within a couple of seconds of that, we heard the loudest explosion I have ever heard in my life.
Oh, man.
It was like it came, you couldn't pick a direction. It came from everywhere, completely around us. And talk about some hysterical, panicking teenage girls. They were screaming. They were crying. They were just so, they didn't know what to do. And then I go, well, where's the sirens? And I go, okay. You know, if it was an explosion like that, we would have felt it too. What could do it? Then I go, well, maybe because of the old buildings and the brick streets, maybe somebody with a loud truck or something, you know, it backfired. And I'm trying to come up with all these reasons, and I never could figure out what it was. And then when I went and reviewed the, and my friend, the best was my friend was in the middle of the girls in the hall, and they're all screaming and hollering, and they're clinging to her, and she's looking at me like, what? She never heard the noise. She was the only one that didn't hear the noise.
Oh, wow.
And then when I played it back, it sounded like on the video, it wasn't as loud, but it sounded like somebody had dropped a large, heavy piece of say, wood furniture, box, something like that, but with weight to it, and they had dropped it on a wooden floor. And, of course, the floors up there are carpeted. And I've never talked to anybody that ever had that experience, so that was pretty interesting.
Wow. That would be crazy just to hear, like, a really loud boom. You know, because, you know, when you're doing
it's like, what do I do? What is that? And I've never heard one that loud. And it did. It came from, it was like a total 360. It was just a engulfing explosion sound, loud, very loud. And it's like, where's the sirens? Where's the screaming, you know, people? And I don't hear anything. You know, and except for all these girls that are screaming hysterically. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, I wasn't the only one that heard it. And then I think that next morning they asked us, you know, how come y'all stayed up all night? We couldn't, you know, we probably were old people to them. You know, we heard y'all walking up and down. And why were y'all running up and down the hallway? they went hurt, yeah, which, you know, some people say they hear that and stuff. And it's like, well, no, wasn't us. We were asleep.
Oh, wow. So they're probably all freaked out after you told them you were asleep, huh?
Yeah, they were. That was, you know, that was really an interesting trip. Oh, and then they would put that book up at night where people would write their stories, the things that happened. But mm-hmm. I knew where it was, and it was okay for me to get the book. And so we sat around in the lobby after midnight with us girls, like sitting around the campfire, and we were reading the things that happened in all the different rooms. And then some of the girls decided to go into the one room downstairs closest to the lobby. I think it's the one closest to the lobby, and it has like a hot tub in it. It's got the bed that's up on a platform. And they went in there, and my friend Charlene went with them, and she was taking pictures of them. They got the little, silver goblets and stuff on the champagne bucket, and they were, you know, taking pictures in there sitting in there with the goblets and things. And while they were doing that, a couple of them were still in the lobby with me. This was after 2 o'clock because everybody had gone from the restaurant. And, of course, one of the stories there is about pots and pans, and I'd never heard the pots and pans. But we could hear somebody in there sorting silverware. We could hear dishes. And, I mean, we could hear it very clearly. So, you know, we went back in, and I looked at, you know, what they showed me what they had been doing and taking the goblets out of the holder and stuff. So they went back and did that. So we could see if we could hear that in the lobby. And this is the way we do our clients when we do their investigations and stuff, too, trying to recreate. And we couldn't recreate what we had heard. So they weren't the ones making the noise.
Wow.
That was one of those really active nights.
That sounds like it.
Yeah, we had some, you know, we had a weird experience last night in Hotel Marshall. It was like, none of us take the elevator because the first time we ever went in the building with the owner, all of us got stuck in the elevator with the owner, and there's nobody else in the building, and we're locked in the building. And, the elevator stopped about 2 feet from the floor we were trying to get to, and we had to pry the door open to get. So we don't mess with the elevator anymore. So we're all investigating last night, and all of a sudden the elevator decides to start moving on its own. You know, and the only way that can happen is someone has to push the button, right? Well, no one pushed the button. And it would go to some of the floors, and usually it would ding, you know, when it opened. It wouldn't ding. So we took the opportunity, and we stuck an EVP recorder and an ovulus in one of the elevators and just start sending it to different floors to see if we could, you know, because in an active hotel, the elevator is going to be active, right? So I'll be interested to see if our EVP recorder picked up anything on its elevator ride.
Nice.
That would be very interesting. And that's what we try to do when we go to places like that now, too. We're trying to go back to some old school stuff. We're trying to come up with, like that, different ways of doing something. And to see what we pick up, and then recording it too when we can, so that people can see that it was almost, it's like we do this controlled flashlight experiment. We don't use any of the twist flashlights because of obvious reasons with arcing and everything, but we will take several different, you know, we take like 3 to 6 different kind of flashlights that either you push the button on the back, you flip the switch on the side, but anything other than the twisting of the head of the flashlight, and when we'll put them all down, and then we'll have, that's why we have the different ones, and see if we can get responses with those, and actually we get responses when we do that fairly frequently, and most of the time it's like they all have fresh batteries in them, and they'll get really dim. They'll go to extremely, you know, brighter than they normally are when you turn them on. They're usually, you know, they don't go higher than that. And they'll go off, they'll go on. So, you know, what it means necessarily, we don't really know. We're not scientists, but we're just trying to document different things. And, but the fact that we're using push button, flip button things, of different types of flashlights, and we're getting things that way. It's just something that's, you know, interesting. I've gone back to using the 8mm Sony camera that I've got video.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to get a lot of stuff on that, and that, you know, when I brushed it off, I don't know how long it's been since I used it. And the battery doesn't work it anymore, so I use regular AA batteries in it now instead of the camera battery. We're trying to use that more. I started bringing the 35mm with me, and we'll probably start bringing the Polaroid camera too.
Nice.
And, you know, I heard part of what you were talking about before, you know, we started talking, and I thought about bringing the candles in. But just the basic stuff, I can remember when I started, it was just a camera and a recorder. And, of course, then mm-hmm. we were using the micro cassettes and stuff. And, not, you know, nothing, there wasn't anything digital back then that I was using.
Yeah, we're trying to get a conglomerate mix of different things because, yeah, we have all the technical stuff. You know, we get stuff from Jeremy and Martin and, you know, and stuff. But it's also, like you said, we want to, because there's just so much of that you can do, you know, being in the paranormal for 4 years now. It's like, why don't we take a different direction and start bringing some of this old stuff back in? Or let's actually test some things that God created, the natural elements of the earth that were here long before technology, and incorporate that in and use our equipment to monitor the environment and see what kind of results we can get. So Yeah, that's what we're trying to do, and we'll know more once we review all the evidence from last night if we got some good results from our experiments. But, yeah, I mean, the team's excited about trying new things, you know. Martin, I forgot to tell you, I used your ion generator last night, and I put it down in the basement of the hotel and let it run, and Shonda went down there with her ghost box and got some really crazy things coming across it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, I never, and this is kind of funny, but I never thought to run a ghost box while I had my ion generator going. I'm going to have to try that sometime.
Yeah. Yeah, we got some crazy results using your ion generator.
That's awesome. Yeah, I need to make
that.
Go ahead, Martha.
I was going to say, that's kind of the key, like picking up sometimes different things that you just wouldn't even think of using. You know, they're designed for something totally different, even, and bringing that in and trying it to see how it works.
The interesting one that I'm looking forward to reviewing is the flashcard experiment we did, where I wrote down 5 questions on index cards, and I sealed it in an envelope, and I had split my team, my group into 3 teams. Well, I gave the experiment to one of the teams. Well, they didn't know anything that was written on those cards, and we went to a floor, and they unsealed the envelope, and they had to hold the cards were in the envelope face down. So when they pulled the card out, all they saw was the back of the card, right? And they weren't allowed to look at the question. And they held it up to the camera and showed the camera what the question was. And they didn't say any words, anything during the EVP session. They just held up that card for a certain amount of time, and we ran our EVP recorder, and we're going to go back and review it and see if we get EVPs to the answer to those questions. And what we're trying to do, because our friend Larry Flaxman, we talked to David Roundtree and some of these others, you know, their theories are that what, as paranormal investigators, how much is our brain influencing the environment? Are we actually creating paranormal anomalies? So this experiment is taking the human brain out of the picture, because if you don't know the question, you're not going to know the answer. So your brain has been taken out of the situation.
Right, because that way you're not thinking of the answer.
Exactly.
You don't know it, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always wondered that too, you know, especially when you're doing like either EVP work or even ghost box, like how much of your thinking influences what's going on, you know? Because they even did this, it's a photon experiment, but, you know, they're shooting photons through a tube, and it had 2 directions. Once it gets to the end of the tube, it had 2 directions it could possibly go. And what these scientists have figured out was that when no human was present, it would always go through this certain tube. But then when there was a human there to watch it, it would act all erratic, and it would actually go through both tubes. So we know that the human actually influences stuff, but, you know, in the paranormal, how far do we actually affect the other side, you know?
Right. Well, a good example of that, too, is like, say, dowsing rods. When you're using mm-hmm. dowsing rods, you know, and for those that can use them, you know, and I know people that they just swing around like nothing and work really super great with those people. But then in the back of my head, too, is how much am I influencing. It's the Houston air. It made me tongue-tied. But, you know, you're sitting there and you ask a question, and even though you're not moving your hands at all, you're good and steady, you're still a lot of times thinking, you may be thinking something, a yes or no, and mm-hmm. how much of that is somehow influencing, there we go, how they're going to swing if they swing at all. Yeah, so that's something that I've thought of myself for those.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What if you, maybe a good experiment would be is if you had a stand, a clamps or something to hold the dowsing rods in the middle so that the bottom and everything is free for it to swing, and you're not even holding them, something else has them steady, and try it that way. You could take the human element out of that with at least the holding part. Would that make any difference?
Yeah.
I like that
idea. If I'm not mistaken, I think Will from Unknown did that one time, didn't he?
I don't know if he did or not. I didn't ever see it.
Yeah, I think he was talking about building it. He might have been talking about building it, but
yeah,
it's a pretty interesting concept because, I mean, if people aren't there to influence the rods, I mean, because you're talking, we have motor muscles that twitch very, very lightly, you know? So it could even be that what's making these dowsing rods move. But, you know, what if you put them perfectly level in some kind of vise or something and they still moved, you know?
That'd be interesting to try and see what kind of results that come out of that.
Oh, yeah.
We might just have to do that. I know when I get back from Houston and go through our stuff, we have several clients that have called with some businesses and things that, well, met possible clients that want us to go through and do some stuff. So that'll give us a good venue for that. Also, you found out last year up in Marshall, our group has kind of adopted the Barton House in Malakoff, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, you know, access to that pretty much, you know, whenever we want. So we never, and when we were there and we had, and we'll do this again, we're still continuing to do this to help raise money for the garden club and to help with the restoration. I mean, it's going to take a lot of money, but every dollar helps. To have some groups come in the end, and we're actually allowing groups, or we've discussed allowing groups to come in if they want to investigate. We've had two groups come through there now. Well, our group hasn't. We haven't officially investigated that place. We're in and out of there quite a bit, some of us. A lot of times it's just to take pictures. I started documenting the restoration process back in 2009, and right now it's more of the restoration of the deterioration of some things. But they have gone, and they're almost doing an archaeological dig out there as they're restoring some of the ground. They're finding pieces of things and putting stuff back together. And since they've really, really started working on things, some things have actually gotten a little active there, whether it's haunted or not, I don't know, but I know it's a historical site. And I know that a lot of stuff went on there back in the early 30s and stuff. They had parties there, and they had gambling. You know, probably the gambling is, you know, don't have any facts on that per se, proof, but we have people from the area that talk about, you know, that they used to do the gambling and stuff down in the basement because it actually has a basement. They used to have dances on the rooftop with a live band. The man was very influential. And then there's a house around the corner from there that we're working with. The Historical Society owns that one. It's called the Clay House. And we're working with that where people can come in and do. We're going to set up four investigations with that, too, where they can, you know, contact. They have it so that if someone calls and questions them about that, you know, they contact me so we can get that set up. And actually our group, May 11th, I believe, is the date. We're going to have a meet and greet at the Playhouse in Malakoff. And I don't have all the paperwork in front of me to see exactly what we decided, but we're going to have them. It'll be, it's a Saturday, and I
I'm not even positive on the time it starts right now. We'll get all the information out, you know, in the next month or two on it. But we're going to have a meet and greet there. And then I believe it's in January of 2014, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to put together a mini conference there, which will have an investigation there that evening.
Nice. Did you guys investigate the hospital in Pittsburgh?
We've been out there twice. We're supposed to go out a third time this year, and weren't able to make the third trip. But we have stuff set up for next year to go out there. That's a very interesting place.
Yeah, I'll give you a little interesting fact, too. I'm working on trying to get ownership of the building.
Are you really?
Yes.
I know that it's for sale.
Yeah, I had a meeting myself, Mike, and Will. We sat down with the mayor, the county judge, and the secretary and the city manager. We had a meeting. Right now we're in the process of figuring out all the numbers and all that, but the town's highly interested in us getting possession of the building, and we're going to turn it into a research center for paranormal, you know, so that people can come there. Yeah.
Yeah, because that was very active for me both times. I go a lot of, well, that's one of the interesting things I've always had is historical places or old places, and that's not necessarily historical, but it's pretty close to that. And but I've had, you know, we've had interesting feedback from the place. I've heard things there, and what's real interesting is this last time I was talking to a friend of mine who is very good at what she does as a psychic, and she started cold reading the place when I talked to her, and she, there's not like there's a lot of stuff out there you can read, so she didn't really know much, and I didn't tell her anything. She started describing it to me. She started telling me the names of people out there and just all sorts of different things. And when she did that, I came in, you know, on that night for that investigation with that information, and not everybody in the group had that information. A couple people had some of it, but nobody had all of it. And so this time when we were in there, like when we were upstairs in one of the operating rooms where there's a lot of activity, they, you know, as far as what we've been told, but we were up in that area, I used the names I was given, and I addressed them directly and asked questions. I did the same thing down in the psych ward, and we got direct responses. The only problem with the psych ward and us taking that, what was said, it was what I expected to be said, is that upstairs there were four of us. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
The door was locked. Nobody was up there but us. When we were downstairs in the psych ward, there were 10 of us in this room. And I know when I trust the people in our group. And the other people that were in there, I don't know. And so while I got an answer that I expected to get, I can't say that it didn't come from somebody else in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So we would love to be able to use that for something, but we don't.
Yeah, we had some interesting results too. We investigated that place, and Jeff, didn't you have something you and your group? Didn't you have something thrown at y'all upstairs?
Yeah, we had, small beads thrown at us.
Oh, crazy! We had Mardi Gras ghosts up there.
Yeah, so. You know, that's one thing. you know, that, like, you're trying to, you know, those places in Malakoff to, so that some of the teams can come in and investigate that, you know, because it's really hard, you know, in this part of the state of Texas to get in a lot of places, you know. You got to earn a lot of people's trust when it comes to, you know, going into these places, because they're kind of leery a lot of the times. And, yeah, when we pitched our idea to the city of Pittsburgh of how much revenue that we could bring into that little town, you know, because there's not many research centers or places to go, right, that's strictly just set up for paranormal, where you can just go in anytime you want with your team and in a controlled environment and investigate, you know. And so
exactly.
That's one thing that we're trying to do, you know. It's not necessarily something we're doing to try to make a profit off of. The way I look at it, if I can charge a reasonable amount, you know, something that is a lot less than other places, and still be able to pay the bills of and keep the upkeep of the building, you know, my thing is I want to do it for the paranormal field, to give everybody the opportunity to have those type of facilities out there, especially in our area. It's a lot harder. We have to drive a long way, you know?
Yes, I know. And it's great, because I know that supposedly the house right next door to the hospital, which is the one the mayor lives in,
yeah,
supposed to be one of the most active houses in town.
Oh, yeah. He was telling us about
people. Was he? Because I know a lot of people up there, they don't really like to talk about the stuff. Like, you know,
nope,
we don't
no.
talk about
fair
it.
Enough.
It's not really here. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like, you know, some school districts, if they don't talk about drugs, and they don't have drugs in the school. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we're excited about that opportunity. So hopefully that'll all pan out. It'll be a beneficial thing for you guys as well as anybody else out there. So
that
hopefully that'll all go through.
Yeah, that would be wonderful, because I thought about that too when I found out.
Mm-hmm.
About the place, but it's, you know, it's 2 hours from us, so it's not, you know, it's, if I lived in town, yeah, but I know that initially,
yeah.
Initially the city thought they would keep getting the same tax amount from the hospital as they did when it was an open operating hospital, which of course in reality, you know, wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know,
it needs so many repairs and stuff.
Yeah, and you know, when we talked to them, you know, because part of the property is owned by the county and part is owned by the city, so it's going to cost them a lot of money if they go ahead and demo the place, and that's what we were talking about, you know, and it's a win-win situation for them if they give us opportunity to get this building where they don't, you know, it's not going to cost the county and the city money, right? So,
right.
And I would hate for them to knock down a building like that. It's a very big building, and there's a lot of activity in it. So, you know, I look at it as an opportunity for us to use.
It is, and I have to say, it's probably one of the most active places I've been in. I know the first time I was there, we had, I heard a little girl upstairs, or what sounded like a little girl. And, you know, they thought there was a little girl, but I've talked to a couple of, like I said, the one psychic that gave me the name information, and a couple other people that I know. And it's like, they're not picking up on any child over there. And I know that they used to keep some toys up there. And, you know, who knows what's doing that, and that may be just those ornery guys that are up there just, you know, messing.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's something, well, and some of the stuff and some of the information I was given is something that could possibly even be backtracked to see if those people were ever there. And with the names I have, did those incidents actually occur?
Mm-hmm.
And that, which is something that, because I'm big on the research part. Part of it's just my normal investigative
just I do it without even thinking about it. But the history of something is just really important to me, not just for preservation.
Yeah.
But to help,
well,
to help give you, yeah, the whole story.
Yeah, we found out by doing our investigation last night at Hotel Marshall, we found out so much more information, and Shonda had dug up a lot of history on the building for the conference last year and for Fort Worth Paranormal when they did their investigation there. And our stuff, with a combination of the history that Shonda has dug up and what Fort Worth Paranormal picked up, it's all correlating together, which really excites me that we've uncovered stuff that's got some, you know, valid proof that this stuff has happened. And we actually found out through Mike did a gun spill last night, and the spirit that was talking to him said that there is a diary that someone that worked there kept of all the things that went on, and supposedly the spirit says that the diary is still somewhere in that town. Someone has it. So we're going to do some more digging around and see if we can find who has this diary.
Talk to me later.
Okay.
Private.
Yeah.
And I have some information I can give you on that.
Sweet.
Yeah, because I know all about that.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
That's one of those, well, but that's one of those things that I've kept, you know, just kept quiet. But, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I know a direction of where to go to look for it.
Good deal. Yeah, I'm like you. I like to dig. I'm just a big history buff, so I love finding out the history of a building, you know, learning what went on there.
Well, here's something interesting. I went to Rib Crew, had an event, I believe it was in November. Yeah, it was in November, down at Mosheim in Seguin.
Mm-hmm.
At the Mosheim Mansion. I'd never been to the Mosheim Mansion. I didn't know anything about the Mosheim Mansion, and I kind of left it that way on purpose just to see if I could pick up on anything. And Maria Elena Santos and I and Terry Jones and Dave Jones, and Maria and Terry and Dave are all, you know, they're all part of East Texas Paranormal as well. And Maria is a pretty good psychic. So Maria and I were sharing a room, and both of us all night long, and then there were a couple people from Rip Crew there too, and I think Robbie was one of them. And we kept hearing somebody pacing up and down and up and down the hall. Almost all night it kept waking us up, and I know at one point Maria finally got up and went out to look out there and see if she could see anybody. But the next day, like I said, I didn't know the history of the place. And there is somebody that's supposed to pace up and down. You know, I heard the story later after that. But we went downstairs, and I discovered, you know, I learned, you know, that it was John Ireland that originally built it. And he was, of course, governor of Texas. He was an attorney. And down in the basement, they have a room that was like holding cell. And there's supposed to be, and there's a tunnel that goes out to the courthouse. And they would take the Hispanic and the African-American prisoners or because they was usually with something criminal trial or something, and they would take them through the tunnel over to the courthouse. Well, when I went down the stairs the next morning, there was just three of us that went down there. I knew there was a holding cell. I didn't know where. I didn't, you know anything, but I had learned that much. And I was able to target where it was. But when I went down there, while some of that basement had been redone, I picked up on some of the brick in there, or the old brick, was actually brick that was had a Bartlett House connection.
Wow.
Because Thomas Bartlett owned the brick factory. He had the brick factory next to the house in Malakoff. He actually invented colored brick, and colored brick is white brick. you know, because usually the brick's going to be the color of whatever clay they use to make the brick.
Mm-hmm.
So he and while the Moshine was built in the 1800s, and he discovered this in the 20s, they had, you know, done some things and stuff, and there was a connection. I said, and I felt it when I walked in there, and then I talked to somebody else, and they seemed to feel the same thing. But Thomas Bartlett was a shaker and mover, and there weren't as many in Texas back then as there are now, as far as a lot of people. So there's a very good chance that when Moshine bought the, I can't think of his first name right now, but he bought the mansion from John Ireland, because he sold it after he didn't, after he lost one of the re-elections for governor. When he lost and he was no governor, went up for sale. Moshine bought it. Moshine, I think they were German. The name sounds German. And so that family took over everything. And he was, from what I understood, you know, of course, he was obviously a 10,000-square-foot mansion, very well-to-do in his business life and everything. So as it stands to reason that if Thomas Bartlett and his factory is the only factory and stuff that has the colored brick, the white brick, it's going to come from his place. And then the flags were very influential. In fact, they had the flag house was the first house in the city of Malakoff to ever have running water, have indoor plumbing. So yeah, it's just as you dig and research. And I had some more information if I just had the time to go to the counties, go to the historical commissions, the historical societies, and the libraries, and trace through all this stuff, it would be absolutely fascinating.
Oh yeah. We had talked to the owner. This was when we were Will and I were, and Jeff were part of another group before Unknown. We were actually scheduled to go investigate the Baker Hotel, Mineral Wells.
Yep.
And 2 days before we were supposed to leave, they had sold the building. And so Will here recently emailed the owners, and you know, because they had just been featured on Ghost Adventures. And we talked to the owners.
Plans on doing some stuff with it, yeah.
Yeah, and the owners are now in talks about opening it up to the paranormal field and let teams come in there.
That would
be awesome.
Great. In fact, I have a good story about that. I was there. My sister and I went there last month and just did a walk around, and she had never been there. I've been around. I've stopped in there and probably walked around the building about four or five times or so at least, you know, and I just go shoot some pictures. And I had talked to another friend of mine, Kat Lang, in fact, and we were talking about it. Now, she's never been there either. She's in Washington State. And she starts telling me some stuff about the place. And then she starts telling me about this chair. And she described it as having a red cushion on it, but faded red cushion. And it was, it was an older chair, not antique necessarily, but an older chair. And about the chair, it's like, if you were in there, don't move it. You know, if you move it, it might not be good. But she's telling me all this stuff about the chair and different things. And I did like I've done the last several times, because you have a couple of broken windows in the front. If you climb the stairs to the front and you walk around there, and I stick my camera, through there and snap some pictures. When I get back home, and this was an area that you couldn't see in there. It was too dark.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get home and I'm uploading the photographs, what do I have in one of the photographs? A chair with that red cushion.
Huh.
What?
And I sent it to her, and it's like, that's the chair. But it kind of blew me away a little bit, because I wasn't expecting to see some red chair in a picture. You know, it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So,
that's crazy. Well,
That would be a good idea.
That'll be a great place. You know, that's one of the places I've always had my eye on, and I'm just like, if they open it up for teams to come in, man, that's going to be a great place to go because that place is so big.
Yeah, I know. It's huge. And it's huge, and it would be really interesting. I know they have some architects. I believe it's architects out in Austin that are working on trying to get plans because they did want to open some of it back up, whether it's just like conference center type stuff or to actually bring in some of the floors. I don't know if you know how many floors. It would be great to get up from the very top of that place, but, you know, for them to get going. So I'm just hoping that they do it. I know you can go to Facebook, and the hotel is on Facebook. Yeah, with information, you know, contact the chamber, you know, for information and stuff like that, because I've checked that out a couple times to looking for, you know, some updates on the progress of what they're doing there.
Yeah, the owners replied back to Will and said that right now they're trying to figure out how much they would charge to let a team come in, and they're supposed to hit us back with that information. So I'll be curious to see if they do that, you know, for the time being, because in a way it's going to help that building, because if they start getting some kind of money coming in, they can start restoring it. And because that place has got you want to talk about history, that place has got a lot of history.
Yeah, and there's nothing out there in Weatherford to help out the town.
No, other than the crazy water, and I went and got 3 cases of number 4, so that, you know, see if that, you know, kind of calms me down a little bit.
Right.
The water with the lithium in it, yes. I take my dose every day. but that, I know, because that, in the heyday, that place would be, you know, I mean, it's just out there. And if they could restore it, and not only that, but if they could bring, you know, back some of the water and stuff, because I think they use that spring water in the, you know, for the, in the tubs and stuff in the rooms or somewhere or something, and make it, you know, that place could be like a little Texas hot springs.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what are some... what are some locations that you want to try to go investigate you hadn't had the opportunity yet?
Well, I don't know per se, other than what I look for that I'd like to go, other than with clients call, you know, with their houses and stuff. And I do have a place in that we may be going in the one of the suburbs in Dallas. And if we go, it's going to be wonderful because it's a place that I wanted to get into before I was even really doing the, you know, the stuff actively. I just wanted to go there. In my 20s and stuff, I would go into these historical places. Fort Sumter is a good example, and that's one place I really want to go back to is Fort Sumter, because when I was in there, standing inside the fort by the walls, by the water, the ocean and stuff, even then, without really, a lot of stuff happened to me back then, or I was aware of, that I have more knowledge of now, and I just didn't put it together back then, even though I was interested. I didn't have any mentors or any guides or anything. Of course, that was before the internet and all that, you know, had access to all that stuff and people, but I, you know, it was just, the history just seeps out of the walls there. It's like, I felt like if I turned around, I'm going to see the soldiers literally just stepping right out of the wall with their weapons and doing their daily life. And so that was in my early 20s, so I would love to go back there. It could be in the daytime once open. It doesn't necessarily have to be at night. We don't do all our stuff at night anyway, because if there's activity, there's activity.
Mm-hmm.
and stuff, but I'd love to go back there. Of course, I want to go back to, you know, I would love to be able to continue to go back to the hospital in Pittsburgh. But if we can go to this other place in the suburb and do an investigation, that would be absolutely fantastic because it's a place that has an interesting past. So, you know, and I don't know if I'll ever be able to say much more than that about it. We're not necessarily looking to go to the places that everybody else goes. You know, because they've been so oversaturated with people coming in and asking, you know, if there's anything there, actually, you know, like asking it to perform for them and such. I like to find places where maybe some violent crimes happened in the past. Go to these areas and see if we can pick up anything. And, you know, another historical site that nobody, maybe there's even been anything said about anything paranormal, because to me, whatever paranormal really is, it's something that, you know, can happen anywhere.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, we go to some of the places sometimes that, you know, everybody goes to, but our main thing is we like going to historical buildings or whatnot besides our clients that call us, but go to buildings that really have not ever been investigated and really understand the building, find out all the history, gather data, evidence, whatever we can. And that's one thing that City of Marshall has opened that door for us, because we've been so gracious with helping them, and they help us. It's a good relationship, and you know, they got a lot of historical buildings over there. And of course, Jefferson kind of overshadows Marshall, and Marshall's got, you know, I think there's 94 historical buildings and homes in Marshall, you know. And so that's one thing that we've been really excited about, is to really investigate all those buildings over there.
It would be. And the one difference you have, too, with Marshall over Jefferson is you have a lot more records available to you to research the history and stuff in Jefferson than you do Marshall, in Marshall instead of Jefferson, because after they had that big flood in Jefferson, they lost so much of the documentation. So there's no old newspapers to go back to or anything, because it was all lost in the flood that swept through.
Yep, definitely. So I'm with you. I kind of like and even, you know, when I'm driving around in my daily life, you know, just a creepy old looking building, it sparks my curiosity of what's going on in there, right? What's the history of that building?
Right. There was a place in Dallas, an old, huge, well, let's say humongous, old funeral home in Dallas, somewhere around Baylor Hospital, and that, you know, somewhere in all those areas. And it was not at the theology school, the seminary there, or the theological college, but it was nearby. It wasn't part of it. And back in the mid-80s, when I worked for armed patrol security in Dallas for a while. And another one of my weird things. And we would get calls at this funeral home, and it would take about an hour to clear it. You'd have homeless people that would try to break in. And I started, you know, then I forgot about it for many years, but when we would go in there, it was absolutely fascinating. Of course, everything was boarded up. It was huge. It was traditional. And we would go through the basement, go through everywhere. I don't remember if there was a basement. But what fascinated me that I wanted to go back to and try to investigate maybe more than the funeral home is, back in the 1800s and stuff, people, you know, lived in a lot of the funeral homes. Well, this one was so big, and it had such a large roof, but the whole attic was, you know, was available. They had it all, had wood floors and stuff up there. And then they had actually had like little apartments in a square inside there. And then inside that was like a little courtyard, but it was all enclosed in the attic. So you had people living in the attic that worked at the funeral home. And I wanted to go back there, and we spent, several of us in our group spent a bunch of time trying to locate it, because I could see it in my mind, but I couldn't, and I knew what it was near. And we finally had figured it out, and it's a parking lot now. They ended up just, it was another one of those grand old buildings that was just torn down, which was quite the shame, because that would have been really fascinating. We wanted to try to contact whoever owned it to see if we could go in there.
Right.
And stuff. And can't do it. It's gone. So.
Yeah, Jeff came across the old-looking school, didn't you, Jeff?
Yeah, down in over about 20 miles from where I live in Mosheim, Texas. It looks like an old Catholic church, but when I did the research on it, I found out it had been the school here in town. In that town.
That's cool.
You know, it is, and I think it's really great to be able to go into something like that and do some research on it and see what you can pick up, and you can discover things that, you know, nobody else has had it. It's not all used up, and... I like going to some of those places that everybody else goes to, but I look at that more of, that's not really an investigation necessarily.
Right.
There's a lot, you know, it's a place you can go and you can walk through, and you can say you've been there, and you might end up with some personal experiences, but usually it's contaminated when it comes to evidence and stuff, when you have a lot of people in there. And so you come away from it with, you know, an I've been there type t-shirt or something, and that personal experience.
Yeah, and I know for us, you know, we took a 12-14 hour road trip and went to Old South Pittsburgh Hospital in Tennessee, and you know, a lot of teams have been there, but we really wanted to go. And you know, we had so many plans of different things we wanted to do during an investigation, but it was like Martin said earlier, it's like a kid in a candy store, you know. But we had a lot of fun and a lot of experiences there, so I'm glad we made the trip.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Right. Well, you know, and some of that, it can be fun like that with experiences if you actually have the place to yourself, you know, whatever group you put together to go there. And you literally do have it to yourself, and there's not other groups and other parts and stuff, which sometimes, you know, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
In some of the places, you think you're going to have it all, and there's other people there too. And that,
oh yeah,
you know, that can be disappointing.
Yeah, and you know, and the great thing that I like about not only your team but a lot of the other teams, you know, in the Dallas area and, you know, Austin, Houston and whatnot, for the most part, you know, I know all the teams that came to the conference last year, you know, everybody's got a good rapport. Everybody pretty much gets along, and, you know, and I see a lot of it on the internet, on Facebook or whatnot, of other states, Northern, you know, there's a lot of animosity between teams and, you know, sitting on their evidence, not sharing it, or sharing ideas with other teams, or bashing teams, this, that, and other, you know, and it's always refreshing, you know, with teams like yourself and some of the others that you work with and we've worked with before, that we don't have all that nonsense going on, you know. And
no, I know. I mean, there's enough stuff going on. We're also not the paranormal police.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and you can... I know that some people talk about, like, para-unity as it's a joke and this and that. Well, para-unity doesn't necessarily mean that we all have to think alike.
Right.
You learn to agree to that you're going to disagree. And but by talking to different people with different thoughts, different ideas, that's how you pick up stuff. You know, you go listen to there's classes that I take with law enforcement and stuff, and I've had them, every couple of years I go take it again. And it's, it's the same class, but you have somebody else instructing it. You have other people from law enforcement in there. And by being in that environment with these different people from different places, you're going to pick up all you need is just one good nugget of information that you didn't have, or an idea you didn't have. You go back and it's like, I'm going to try that.
Yep.
And, I know there's a lot of it. You get into the jealousies, or you get into the somebody trying to one up somebody or something. And, at my age, it's like, I don't need to one up anybody. I never have. I don't care.
Yeah.
unless you find something that's really egregious happening, that you feel like for other safety, or it's possibly criminal, and Facebook is still not the platform for that necessarily. Make the calls you need to make. Call the police, or call the mayor, or call, the founder. There's ways to do it other than just put stuff out there like that.
Yeah.
And eventually it may eventually make it there, but you need to make sure that you have everything documented. And all the time I was in journalism, and I still do this because I have my blogs and stuff, and plus I, put stuff on my MarDex site, and then we have it on our East Texas Paranormal site, the ETEX Haunted, is if you don't have documentation, I've had people come to me from other states, with they have this information because they feel like, and this is what's good is when you can trust somebody and talk to them about something. This is something bothering me. This is what, the information I have, what should I do with it? And the biggest thing I tell them, if they have something they feel like they need to say, if they feel like it's something improper, is to make sure you have your documentation. Don't just have it via he said, she said, and that's where you fall back into like doing a criminal investigation or something. You need your evidence. If you don't have evidence, if you don't have documentation, as far as I'm concerned, it's just a rumor.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing that go ahead, Martha.
I was going to say, and everybody is entitled to their opinion, but that's just it. It's an opinion.
Yeah. And that's one thing, when I got all of y'all in the East Texas Ghost Con group where we chat about different things, I wanted to make sure that everybody in all the teams were involved this year. And, and one thing that I've noticed with other conferences, they're centered around, the public, which is a good thing because, that's where you generate, money to cover your costs for everything. But I wanted something where all of us, the teams, got something out of it as far as information. So that's why I come up with the idea of, all the teams that are there put on a class and just for the paranormal teams and keep the public out of the class part of it, and where we can actually learn different things from different teams, how they do things. And, like you said, it takes that one idea to spark something that you want to try with your group. So, yeah, that's one thing I'm really excited about this year is that we're all going to be, sharing ideas back and forth.
I think that was a great idea. I belong to the American Ghost Society, and I'm a field rep for them for East Texas. And Troy, I've gone up to Illinois in the summer to that conference for several years. I didn't go last year. I went to Louisville instead, and I had a great time there. But the one thing about Troy Taylor's conferences that he puts together is it's a good learning experience for paranormal teams and investigators. You have everything geared towards that. You have some interesting speakers. And you have speakers that maybe some of them have been on TV some, but they're bringing something to it as a speaker that's not related to the show necessarily. It's like Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She's she's, you know, she comes in, and when she talks about one of the books she's just done or something, like she did a book several years ago, The Vengeful Djinn. Well, you know, we think Alibaba, we think, you know, rub the, you know, we think of genies and stuff like that, but we don't really put them as something more than I Dream of Genie or something. And listening to her talk and reading her book, she brings into that all this back history of the djinn and the different religions that have, you know, that have the djinn in them, and it just kind of opens up a whole new world on your thought process about that stuff, and you think of it in a different light other than just a child story or something. Same thing with Dr. Rita Louise, with the book she came out with this year, The Man-Made. And in that, you know, she's bringing out the same type stuff as far as, you know, like taking stuff with the Bible or taking stuff with the different religions and with the different mythology and breaking it down and putting different thought onto it. It's a fascinating book. Gives you another way to think about it. And one of the things I liked about Troy Taylor's conference is you have all these authors that are vendors with all these books, like Rosemary's, like, you know, Rita Louise, and then you have all the technical books too on like David Roundtree with his The Paranormal Technology. You have just tons of these books up there, so you come away with this, you know, huge armload of reading and stuff, but that reading is what gives you the knowledge to do what you do and maybe try other things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're doing. Hopefully Martin will put on his tech class where he's actually going to show other teens how to build their own stuff out of, you know, simple projects.
Right.
I think I might make it like what is it called? PowerPoint? You know, and maybe hand out some booklets or something. That way somebody can have, you know, people can have something they take home with them, and, you know, not trying to memorize something just by visual.
Well, that's what we're going to do. We'll do that because, you know, you go to those, and I go to so many other type conferences and stuff, and I walk away with, of course, I'll take notes on a lot of stuff. Anything that's, you know, professional. And well, this is professional too, but if it's something that I'm, you know, in a job or something, but, you know, even the process serving, and fingers crossed, I'll probably have my PI license before the end of the year too. So if I look at them as they're all my fallbacks. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But
so and. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and then with me, though, and stuff, they're all still interrelated with the investigating with the paranormal and stuff. You're using the same things for all of that stuff.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So what are some of the – I know you mentioned a few things. What are some of the things that your group's going to be doing this year, or some of the conferences you may be going to this year?
Well, I know we're doing all that meet and greet, and I believe it's May 11th. Of course, we're going to be up in Marshall with y'all. I will be I'm speaking at the Parunity Conference in Waxahachie on the 23rd of March down in Waxahachie.
Yep. We'll be there.
The one that Becca's doing, that the proceeds are going to go to cancer.
Yeah.
And then I believe it's April. Is it April 3rd up in Jefferson with Jody's History Haunted Legends? And we'll be there as a group, but we'll be there. We'll have a booth there. If we're lucky, we might even have some of our other team member, Terry Jones, T.L. Jones. You know, we've had her paranormal murder mystery, because she's former law enforcement and her husband's current on those. But she's got her new book, Dark Gift, that takes
place over in the Bridgewater Triangle area that, that John Brightman assisted her with research and stuff. She wrote the book, and they swear she's been there because it was so exacting in the mystery that involved, there was, it's a fiction, but it involved John Brightman and his group. And they, you know, like change the last names and stuff, but it takes place there. We may have some of those there. I will be, let's see, what else? There's another one in April in Tyler, George Jones.
Yeah, the Tyler one.
Yeah, well, I will be, I'll be speaking. I'll be speaking at that one, and we'll have a booth there. I know that.
There's a paranormal event in Tyler?
Yes, they got ghost tours now, and they got a their first annual conference in April. Mike's actually going to speak from Unknown Paranormal at that moment.
All right.
That's right. He is, and it's one that I think I don't. I think those are. He's the only one that I know as far as the speakers go. So
yeah.
This is going to be just a bunch of new people there. Yeah, you go to, I think it's, is it,
it's Tyler Ghost Tours or something like that.
Yeah, TylerGhostTours.com. They do historical tours, they do the ghost tour, they do shopping tours, they do several different types of tours. I'm going to have something about the tours, about the ghost tour on Examiner.com on my Dallas Paranormal. I'll have something on that. I'll have something, of course, on the Marshall event, too. I know that I'm going to Florida, Maria, Elena Santos, Tio, and Dave Jones. We're all going to the one that Erica Bouchard puts on. I believe we're going to be at that one. Maria, Terry, and I are going to be, and I believe it's in September, we're going to be in one in Oklahoma. I'm not sure which one it is, but I believe it's in September, and it's somewhere in Oklahoma. I don't have, I just got the information on that one. So I know I'm going to be there. I just don't know, you know, which one it is right now. And our group, let people know, too, that the paranormal, as far as our group is concerned, paranormal is pretty much anything that's unknown so that they can contact us, you know, if they think, like you talk, like the lights, Peel Town lights or cryptids or any kind of stuff, anything that's not normal, of the normal, you know, we're in, you know, they can contact us about and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Try to keep a full wide range on everything. In fact, right before we got on the radio, I was talking to somebody who had just called me about Peel Town, which is a community near where I live over in Kaufman County. And they have the Peel Town lights there. And I have tried to find them, and I don't know exactly which street. There's not a lot of streets in that community. But I've heard people talk about those since I've lived out there, and I moved out there in 85. And not as much now, but my children are 32 and 37. And but when they were younger and they would, you know, have somebody, Kevin and I are hanging out with them that were from that area, I can remember the boys telling me the stories that their fathers had told them about camping out there because it's kind of partially on the Trinity River bottom. And they're talking about Bigfoot, seeing Bigfoot out there. They're talking about seeing the Peel Town lights. I've talked to people who said the lights chased them. It's not like going down to Marfa where you can watch them from distance. These lights are supposed to actually, like, chase you when you're in your car. There's a couple of legends. Like say, in Dallas, you have your Lady of the Lake for White Rock Lake. There they have this same type thing with a lady in – I think she's a boy, but she's out there by some creek or something where there was a bridge, I guess, at one time, and she drowned there. Then there's a little African-American type boy that a lot of people have seen over there as he, like, runs down the street where they would roll the tire with a stick, and they see him. So I'm trying to get a lot of updated information on that, especially from any old timers and stuff before they're gone. I'm working on that with one of my books that I've been trying to work on for a while now. I hope to have my forensic, I think they were looking at right now calling it paranormal profiling, but on doing the forensic type interviews and stuff. I hope to have that done. It's not going to be a big thick book. It's just going to be a basic, almost like a beginner's guide, most likely, on asking the questions and what to look for and stuff. So I'm trying to get that done and get that out. And I've got several others in, you know, waiting in the wings to get started. And of course, the one with the different history and myths and stuff around Kaufman, Henderson, Van Zandt County, Yellows County, and stuff in that area.
Well, that's nice.
So far, that's all we have planned that I can think of.
Nice.
Yeah, you sound like us. We're busy. Like I said, we'll be right there with you at ParaUnity next month. Mike's doing a friendly debate, they're calling it, between him and Anthony Cepeda, spiritual versus scientific. And I know I'm going to be conducting a class there. So, and then our team's going to be helping Fort Worth Paranormal with the investigations that night. So, should be a good time.
Sounds like it. Oh, and there's one other place that maybe can be on the list of places where someone may want to investigate. There's been a couple of them out there before, and they are open to it. In Kaufman County, the county owns the poor farm. And for those that didn't know, every county had a poor farm back in the 1800s and up to the Kaufman was up into the 1950s before it closed. It was self-sustaining. It was a poor farm because if you couldn't pay your debts and stuff, you would go to you'd have to go to the poor farm. Well, I used to be part of the Kaufman County Historical Commission, and I am again. I was just appointed to it in December. The county commissioners make the appointments, and I've already talked to them about having the poor farm because they've been trying to fix it up and renovate it and have it out there. And it is out there for people to go to. Most of the buildings are closed, so you can't go in. Some are open. Some of them you can go. You're going to have the ability to go into with permission and stuff. But if anybody's interested in the tours of that, last year they were designated federally. They got a designation as an endangered historical site. So the county is going to be able to get some grants and such to really start working on the place. The old Kaufman County Jail, which is like four cells. I mean, it was a building they used actually up into the 80s, and then it couldn't be used anymore because Robert Harris had started putting the chemicals to make drugs when they would see them in there, and it became one of those super fun sites to clean up and cleaned up now. It's cleaned up now so you can actually go in there and you could do investigations in there and stuff. So if anybody's interested in that, that's something else they could contact me with, for information on.
Nice. Now, what are some of the websites that your group and you have that people can check out?
Okay, they can go to our group website is ETX. Haunted.com. And then on Facebook, it's, facebook.com/ East Texas Paranormal to keep up with, say, the Bartlett House. As they work to fix it up, it's a Greater Malakoff Area Garden Club, but their address is malakofftexas.com to find out information about stuff going on there. And or you've got my Martha Hazard Decker or my Martha Decker, the facebook.com/, I believe it's author Martha Decker, or author Martha Decker, or just the Martha Hazard Decker. But everything has all our contact information on it. And as events come up, we try to make sure we post them on the East Texas Paranormal site, on Facebook and stuff more than anything.
Cool.
Good deal. Well, it was such a pleasure, like always, to talk with you, Martha, and thanks for coming on our show tonight.
Well, I appreciate the offer, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, definitely. Well, will you try to get you some rest, and have a good night.
Well, I will, and you too, and we'll see you soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Awesome.
All right. Awesome. That was Martha Decker with East Texas Paranormal. It's always good to talk to old Martha.
I've met her before and talked to her in Jefferson, and she's got a lot of knowledge that she brings to the table in the field.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, now I'm trying to... Hopefully, maybe I'll have it up before the end of the show. I have the new Parrot Unity ad to add to the studio board to advertise next month's event. That's our next big thing coming. You know, Martin, you're doing photography for that, and Unknown Paranormal will also be there. So far. Everybody except Mr. Sterl, which he's got one-act play stuff to take care of. So,
yep.
Unfortunately, he won't be there, but the rest of us will be from Unknown Paranormal.
That's literally just a few days before.
Yeah, your contest.
Petition. Yeah.
So, I may be getting a hot tub for that event, so, you know, because...
You son of a bitch.
Don't worry, Jeff. I'll pick some dudes like $20 a piece to go jump in there naked.
Oh man,
not that's... gonna happen.
But yeah, it's cool. Like I said, like I mentioned earlier when Martha was on, you know, Martha and her team, just like we have our relationship with Martin and several other people, you know, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and East Texas, you know, between all the teams, you know, we all get along. We all have different ways of doing investigations. We all have our own ideas. But we don't try to up anybody in the field, you know, and in the people that we associate. So I just wish that the rest of the paranormal community in the other states would take note of that, you know, because that's something that I'm real proud to be a part of with all the people that we're friends with in the field.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's why I'm really looking forward to this, going to the Parrot Unity test this year, because I get to actually meet like a lot of people that are on my friends list that I haven't met before, you know?
Exactly. You know, I've interviewed Riley and Stephen Black many a times on radio, but I've never personally met them in person. I've talked to George Lopez. He's actually called in to Terrify Radio before and talked to Jody and I, and you know, there's a lot of people out there that I just know who they are, but I've never actually physically met them. So I agree with you, Martin. It's going to be a good time to meet a lot of people.
It's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, this is probably a record for Unknown Paranormal Radio in the fact that Jeff didn't say too much tonight.
Well,
Cat has his tongue or something.
No, what I'm doing here, okay, you know, I usually create the event page and then send out the invites to it, but the problem is a lot of people that are on my friends list are not categorized in the paranormal. If what I'm doing, I'm trying to go through and figure out who on my friends list is paranormal and who's not. That way, you know, folks that don't, you know, that aren't really interested in the paranormal don't get, you know, this invitation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You must have got cussed out again.
No, it's, I've got one list of paranormal people, which has, between 300 and 400 people in it. And then the others are all scattered. I've been in the process of trying to find, you know, as many as I can, because Lord knows I won't have time in the week.
Right.
Right.
That is not going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to, once we get closer to May, Martin, I'm going to talk to Larry a little bit more and see if I can extend the invite he gave us, if he'll extend it to you and Stacy, to come along and go to the 10-story tuberculosis sanatorium that we're going to in Arkansas in May.
Oh, yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
And
dude, Martin, you'll trip at that place. That place has got the feel of Waverly. It's highly active. That's the place where we had the rocks thrown at us, and Larry has been there many, many, many times, and the most activity that's ever happened to him happened when we were there. Imagine that.
Because you guys bring the energy with y'all, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've known some other teams that you go and investigate with them, and they're like, they treat it like it's like the same old, same job that they go to every day, and they're like, man, this is boring. But then, you bring a bunch of people that enjoy what they do, and they talk about it, and they're having a good time while they're out there. It definitely raises up the activity sometimes.
Yeah, you know, during our experiments last night, I'm videoing this because if any results come from this, then I'm going to clip it out and play it at my class that I'm doing next month at Perry Uni, you know, and actually show what we did and the results we got. But I'm not going to edit what some of the things came out of some of our team members' mouths during the investigation. Because why? Because that's how we are. It might be goofy. It might be off the wall stuff that comes out of our mouths sometime during investigation. But I mean, we got an arborist to cuss us out, right? And we weren't necessarily saying anything, you know, straightforward, those old bland questions. We were kind of provoking a little bit, but in a calm way. We weren't screaming and yelling. We were basically saying, you know, are you a coward because you did this and you're not wanting to come around to us right now because you're intimidated by us, you know? And that's when we got the FU, sir, on the obvious. It's called him a coward, you know, and then Mike said some other things that were really, really funny, you know, kind of antagonizing it a little bit because we were getting results. So if we're getting results, we're going to keep on going with it, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And so I'm not going to edit that stuff. People are going to go, what in the hell are y'all talking about? And, of course, last night we had a lot of gas episodes. The guys from LA Spirits and poor Kim and Eric from Parent Encounters, they got to see us. Oh, yeah, that was funny, too. There was a couple times last night where the ovulist said nothing, you know, for like 15 minutes. And then I know Mike blew one of his loud farts, and the ovulist said dirty.
Nice.
And then it went silent again, and then someone else farted, and it said pig.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, so you know, those folks, they enjoyed it last night. They got to see, you know, we are who we are, you know. And, you know, when Jeff's around, we rag on Jeff, but we rag on each other as well, because it's not just targeted at one of us. I mean, heck, last night it wasn't 10 minutes of being around some of the guests that we had that they were starting to take shots at me alongside Mike.
Well, see, nobody's supposed to take shots at me, though. That's what we agreed upon.
Agreed upon where?
You said it with your eyes.
What? Oh, where do you get this stuff?
Well, you said it with your eyes.
Oh, my goodness.
You gave me a look one time like, I'm never going to pass on Jeff again, and nobody else on the team will either.
Oh, man. Well, I was hoping to get the file up, but it's taking a little while to upload it. So we're just going to go ahead and call it a night. Now, our guest next week, look at my calendar here. Oh, yeah. We have the lovely Valentina Marie Lundberg. She's an investigator. She's in California. She's originally from Denmark. And she's a model paranormal investigator. She got a lot of. I talked to her on the phone, and she's really personable, really cool to talk to. And we're gonna have her on the show next Sunday.
Oh, cool!
And in fact, speaking of her, as I look at the calendar, she's gonna be on Terra 5 Radio this Tuesday. So check out Terra 5 Radio with myself and Jody Parks. And tomorrow, join Matt and Brittany on Into the Darkness Radio. And that's pretty much it for the plugging for now. But we also have, at the end of the month, we'll have Dr. Rita Louise on the show.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah, and put on your calendar, Martin, because I interviewed this gentleman one night, and you and Jeff both were unavailable, so I did the show by myself and interviewed this guy, and he's very scientific. He's got some theories on paranormal activity, kind of on the lines of like what Roundtree and Flaxman and some of them think about. March 17th, we'll have Thomas Fusco on the show. Yeah, that was the guy that I messaged you and told you, man, you missed a good show because it was right up your alley.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait. I've been meaning to talk to him for a while.
Yeah, so this is your opportunity to chat with him again, or chat with him for the first time. So anyway, well, hopefully everybody has a good night and have a good week. I always hate ending the show because then I know that I have to start my wonderful 9-to-5 job or 8-to-5 job for the week.
Shut up. Like, mine's 7:45 to like whenever.
Well,
it's 11 right now.
Well, good for you, but whatever.
No, not good for me.
You chose it.
This is true.
Nice.
Well, Jeff, get us out of here, and we'll talk to everybody again next week.
Awesome.
Awesome. Have a
great weekend, folks.